This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. Author April Smith discusses her book A Star for Mrs. Blake in about 20 minutes on Cincinnati Edition. Historical novels, the pick for the public library's On the Same Page community reading program this year. You'll learn more about the book and the program later. But to begin with, Hate Crimes in the Heartland, the documentary film which explores the media's coverage of hate crimes spanning 90 years in Tulsa, Oklahoma, will have a premiere Monday evening at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, Cincinnati, one of seven cities hosting premieres. In the studio with me today is the writer, director, and producer of Hate Crimes in the Heartland, Rachel Lyon. She's also a professor and artist in residence at Northern Kentucky University. You can join the conversation on the phone at 513-419-7100. That's 419-7100. Or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You can also join the conversation on Twitter or on Facebook. Rachel Lyon, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, you are a prolific filmmaker, have worked on many different types of projects. How did you come to this project, Hate Crimes in the Heartland?
I have to say, some films come to you. This film, I came to it. I had been told by my friend Charles Ogletree, who is a Harvard law professor and the head of the Harvard Center for Race and Justice, who actually, they will be here on Monday, so not to miss them. But he said, you know, have you heard about Tulsa 1921? Do you know about the race riot? And I was like, no, I don't know. And he told me about the worst and most violent race riot in our culture's history. And I was like, wow, that's an incredible story. And I kind of let me get on with my life. And I, several years later, the hate crime that happened in Tulsa in 2012, these two white guys drove into the black neighborhood and started asking people questions and for directions. And as soon as they would turn, they started shooting. And as soon as I heard this is a hate crime, I literally leaned forward and said, oh, my God, this is a film, because we have 90 years, because we can look at the beginning and, if you will, the progress that's been made over the course of these 90 years.
Well, the progress and to some degree, too, Rachel, the lack of progress that has happened. And talk about the 1921 Tulsa riots, because that was basically a hidden chapter of history before the film came out. It was kind of lost and covered up, if you may.
Yes, it was. In fact, kind of five white guys in a room were able to squash the press about what happened then. But Tulsa had this really booming, it was the Black Wall Street of the United States. It was culturally and educationally, there were doctors and lawyers and, you know, hotels and theaters and everything that you could possibly want was right there on Black Wall Street until May 30th, 1921, June 1st, when a white mob invaded, literally invaded, and killed up to 300 people in one night, burned down 35 square blocks in one night, made 10,000 people homeless in one night, and turned them into internment camps. So it was horrific. It was a Holocaust. And we think of ourselves as being so far away from that. But look at the loss of black lives recently and how we are undervaluing the worth of black lives.
What sparked that riot in 1921? I mean, what was the catalyst? Was it just the group of whites who...
There, as always, there's a catalyst. And at the time, there was a black worker who got in an elevator with a white woman. Who knows if he hugged her, if the elevator jostled. But when the door opened, there they were. It looked like kissing. She hollered rape. And boom, it started. And the black veterans from World War I came down to protect him from being they were planning on lynching him, basically. And there was a thing in the newspaper, forgive the language, but it's actually a quote, "We're going to lynch a nigger tonight." And that came out, and the black veterans came down to protect him. So a fight ensued between the blacks and the whites, but it quickly got out of hand. And the whites were able to go to pawn shops and everywhere else and get guns. The police colluded. There's no way you can kill up to 300 people in one night and the police not know what's going on. So it took over 80 years for anyone to apologize. Not one white person was ever jailed. There was no reparation made. This was a disaster, and it's a huge stain on Tulsa.
Rachel Lyon, she's the filmmaker. The new documentary, Hate Crimes in the Heartland, it has its premiere at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center come Monday evening. There will be a reception, then the film, and then a discussion. You can learn more about that at our website, wvxu.org. And you can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. Well, Hate Crimes in the Heartland is also about the media reaction to these events. What was the reaction back in 1921 when those riots took place? Did that news spread across the country?
The news spread across the black press across the country and around the world. The white press definitely submerged it and indicated that that there had been kind of a bit of a black uprising and the whites had put it down and, gee, there are National Guardsmen here keeping the peace. It was, in fact, all of the newspaper accounts disagree with each other. And again, when we look at the stories that become the Trayvon Martin stories, the stories that become the Jeff Davis stories, the stories that become today's media, we have progressed a very long way in the media, some of it very positive and some of it less positive. In Tulsa, the media helped solve the crime in 2012. In 1921, they submerged it or stopped the story from getting out. In 2012, they helped us solve the crime.
When I was watching the trailers, there's a series of trailers online. Again, you'll find a link at our website, wvxu.org. I was struck when you look at the 24-hour news cycle that we have right now and all these news organizations that are just hungering for any story. And you have a great cut, a great set of edits where you have a lot of newscasters all tied together going, hate crime, hate crime, hate crime, hate crime, where they were quick to label this 2012 Good Friday murders a hate crime, where less prone to make that judgment earlier on.
Right. And actually, there a lot of that came from the pressure of Reverend Jesse Jackson flying down because so many blacks had been killed at once, because there was pressure from the black community, and the police didn't want to label it a hate crime. Their feeling was, we've got a triple murder. We don't need to label it a hate crime. And so the reality of the FBI coming in, the national black movement coming in, local blacks putting pressure on, that helped put the pressure on to call it a hate crime. But the issue of hate crimes is tricky. It's very hard to prove. Only because young Jake England had on his Facebook these effing N-words, you know, killed my father, and he was supposedly reacting out of a response. His father had been killed 2 years previous. That kind of, and who self-documents their own racism? But people do it. It's shocking, but people do it. So that kind of documentation helped cement the story that, in fact, this is a hate crime. This is against all blacks, any blacks. They didn't care who they were shooting, who they were killing. They were going after black people. And hate crimes can be against whites, they can be against gays, they can be against Jews, they can be against Muslims, they can be against women, but the majority of hate crimes, far the majority, the elephant in the living room, is race-based hate crime.
Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We have a few audio clips from one of the trailers for the documentary film Hate Crimes in the Heartland. Let's give it a listen.
The two suspects in the Tulsa, Oklahoma shooting spree have been charged with first-degree murder.
The media's focused on what's going to sell.
They were very quick to say hate crime.
Talk about hate crimes.
Murders are a hate crime.
Been a hate crime.
Hate crime.
Hate crime.
We've had actually more hate crimes committed since the president's been in office than we have in the last 25 years.
Racial hatred in America is deep because it's taught and tolerated and it's intergenerational.
A few sounds from the documentary film Hate Crimes in the Heartland. Writer, director, and producer Rachel Lyon is in the Cincinnati Edition studio with me this afternoon discussing that film. And I know what happened in 1921 was pretty buried, and I would imagine in this day and age trying to reach back to find out some truth, if you may, about what happened, the events of 1921, must have been somewhat challenging for you.
It's an incredible story to go back and piece together the remnants of 1921, and I felt really honored to have the opportunity to do it. I had a lot of help from people within the Tulsa community and the universities and the archives, but I've also had a lot of help from the Jewish community. I've had a lot of help from African-American churches. I've had a lot of help from Black organizations to put together the pieces and to find out what really went on, what went down in 1921. The survivors are dying very quickly, and there are just a few left, and we were lucky to get what we do have in the way of survivors. These folks are really old now, and again, their case has never been heard. One of the things that we find that happens in Tulsa, and I think happens in all the cities, why is this relevant to us in Cincinnati? Why is this relevant to, why should we go and see Hate Crimes in the Heartland on Monday night at the Freedom Center? And the reason is that all of the cities in the United States have big racial issues. They may not have the stain of the 1921 riot, but there are big racial issues and racial divides. It's not open warfare like it was in 1921, but it's still there. There's still a racial divide, and we need to heal that wound.
I wanted to ask, there was a statement in the clip we just listened to that said since President Obama came to office that hate crime seemed to be on the rise. Just when you think this symbol of what might be better racial relations, you know, enters the highest office in the land, but the hate crimes, you know, expand. Why do you think that reaction is there?
I think there's two big reasons as to why hate crimes have nearly doubled in the last 10 years. So it's not a minor detail. Hate crimes are an epidemic level here in the United States. And there are two big reasons. The first being the socioeconomic situation. In general, when things are going bad for a lot of people, those that are the second lowest on the rung go after those that are one rung lower. And often, you know, in the olden times, that would be the Irish going after the blacks, let's say, in the 1850s. In our time, that's often what we would call or think of as poor white trash going after blacks or Latinos that are under them. And sadly, it's not the people that own Chevrolet, if you will. It's the people that drive the Chevrolets that are in there committing these crimes. The other thing that drives it, I think, is this segmented media universe that we now have. And people are listening to, I don't want to call it hate radio, but let's say radio and television that's very targeted toward super hard right or even super hard left, where they're only hearing one perspective. And all the time they're hearing things like, you should go out and do something about this. And it's protected speech, but it's so close to encouraging people to do really bad things to each other.
And it's, you know, a lot of times it's entertainment being billed as quote unquote news.
Yes. There is a woman in the film who talks about Fox News as being Fox opinion. And and we really have to think about what is it that is neutral, carrying the message of the news? What does it mean when we say Trayvon Martin has been killed and George Zimmerman has been found not guilty? What does that say to people? And unfortunately, when you look into our different audiences, it says very different things to different people. People who are pro stand your ground, pro own guns, pro making sure that there are rights for the quickly dwindling majority of whites are very firm that Zimmerman should have gotten off and that more recently Bunn should have gotten off or was not guilty of a murder when he killed this young man, Davis, in the car. What happens in black communities is a completely different thing. And what happens, how we hear the news really affects us and how the young people hear news only through internet and online mechanisms, again, really affects how things are responded to.
And I would imagine that presented some challenges for you as well. We spoke about the 1921 riots being interesting to research because of the dwindling eyewitnesses and, you know, the passing of time. I imagine covering the 2012 murders in Tulsa, the Good Friday murders, were just as difficult because of that barrage of news media.
It was fascinating for us to get to the actual survivors, and there were two men who survived those killings, to get to the families of the victims. The families of the victims did not want the death penalty for the two guys who admitted to having committed these crimes. And the film really goes into when should we be dealing with the death penalty? What is the worst of the worst? What are these two guys? Is this a young man who's troubled? Is this a man who's been influenced by the media? Is this some kind of an organized effort? And again, we have to look at all of the dozens of segmented views. And I think when you go and see Hate Crimes in the Heartland on Monday at the Underground Railroad Museum, you will see that we let all those views come out. There is one guy in Tulsa who says, I think race relations are great in Tulsa. I wouldn't say that if I was black. And you kind of just, it makes you laugh, and at the same time, it makes you realize he is reflecting how privileged we as white people are not to be worried that we're going to be shot while walking with a hoodie, while driving with music on, that we're not going to be harmed. We have a privilege.
I know this is more than just a film, that you, on the website, describe it as a project, and this is a project and a film meant to provoke conversation, to both correct the errors of the past and learn for the future. What exactly and how exactly are you going about with Hate Crimes in the Heartland, using that film and the discussions around the film to try to move this forward, this dialogue forward, to have a healing process?
We believe that the way through this is through dialogue, and from people starting where they are, not where they're politically correctly supposed to be, but where they actually are. And we are doing a 7 cities tour during Black History Month this month. So we have gone from Harvard to Harlem. We've gone from Tulsa to Miami. We are going to Cincinnati on Monday, and Tuesday Chicago, and Wednesday back to New York, New Jersey. So we are definitely going around. We are sweeping with a social media campaign that has already reached 400,000 people, and we hope will reach you, the people that are listening to this, as well as people that come to the theater. And we are going to be doing a special screening for the Department of Justice for their 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Project. So we're pretty excited. We're going to be doing a fall sweep, and we hope a broadcast next January, February.
Rachel Lyon, the writer, producer, and director of Hate Crimes in the Heartland, a premiere at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center on Monday, beginning at 6. There's a reception, and then the film, and then a discussion. I'll link with details about that event at wvxu.org. And as I was reading through and doing some research for this, I was also struck by a comment on their website that says, that this really scrutinizes American society's racialized context for interpreting facts in the media, one which values white lives more than black lives. How does this film bring that to light?
When a case happens, when the detective found the body down by the river, the single most important question is, what color was the victim? When that question gets answered, all other things line up. Whether or not there's going to be media coverage of this death, whether or not there's going to be a manhunt, whether or not they're going to be careful with the evidence. And what happens is, in our country, because we have sadly valued the lives of some people more than others, and in general we value the lives of whites more than blacks, although that is less true when people are really poor, when we devalue the poor to some degree more equally. But when we have a white life gone, we seem as a culture to get sad, to get angry, to want to take care of it. That doesn't happen as much. We have, as Reverend Jesse Jackson says in the film, there's a Trayvon in every town.
Mm-hmm. In this movie, I noticed that you don't have a narrator, that you let the subjects on the screen do the talking and the news reports do the talking. Was that purposeful?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it was very challenging to work without a narrator after 65 films. I'm so used to having a narrator help us turn the corners and make the transitions in a film. But we wanted to let the story tell itself. And so we have people who are pro-death penalty and who are anti-death penalty tell the story and carry us through the story. We have people who are concerned about what happened in 1921 and what happened in 2012. We have people that are concerned about our overall nation and what's going on with hate crimes, what's going on with the media, how are we going to get better if we don't start dialogues, tell the stories for themselves.
Does this fragmented media cause more problems? No, exacerbate the problems?
It looks like the media, I used to think of the media as the good guys. We shine the light. We show the problems. We go after what's where there are human rights failings. And we do that. But we also go after the if it bleeds, it leads. We go after the gory, the sensational stories. And in some ways, we go after the stories that are similar to what our sponsors want us to do. Not NPR and public television, thank God, but in general, for-profit media is owned by people who have very specific interests and want those interests followed.
I noticed as I was doing research here that you also said it was a unique challenge to balance the research, fundraising, travel, and production. What was the unique challenge there? What were the challenges that you faced while you made Hate Crimes in the Heartland?
Hate Crimes in the Heartland is not everybody's first choice for a most popular story to do. I was listening to the director of 12 Years a Slave talk about how even though the film has won so many awards, very few people have gone to see it. And so what happens is when you do a film that is about really heavy issues, you have to give people the leeway to come as they are to the table, come as they are to the film. For us, fundraising was a huge challenge. We made this film with local Cincinnati talent, NKU faculty, NKU students, people from the NKU filmmaking area were involved in filming, in doing the music, in doing the in doing every aspect of the film, and everybody had to contribute. So it was really a labor of love for almost everybody involved in the film.
What are you hoping that Hate Crimes in the Heartland will do beyond sparking at least the beginning of the conversation?
I think the conversation is more than you think. We are planning on putting together a major petition. We do know that the hate crimes legislation, the Shepard Byrd legislation, went through in 2009, and it made it more illegal to go after somebody because of how they look or who they love or what they believe. But we as a country have to get more serious about prosecuting hate crimes, about taking care of people who have been victimized by hate crimes, and this film is going to help us do that.
An amazing story. I appreciate you sharing it with us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Rachel Lyon, she's the filmmaker whose film Hate Crimes in the Heartland will premiere at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center on Monday. You can visit WVXU.org to find links and more information about that documentary film. The premiere at the Freedom Center takes place Monday beginning at 6. There's a reception, then the film, then a discussion. And again, a link for more details about that event also at WVXU.org, where you will find a link to the Hate Crimes in the Heartland website and more about the project that they're endeavoring.